So many, many thanks to Jessica for, it's really, it still blows my mind. I've been teaching since 1999, and every retreat involves a lot of energy, organization, thinking for the benefit of all, and putting things into action. And it always takes more time than you can describe, and so, and a really good organizer, a good manager, does it so well that it's easy to not notice all that went into it. And someone today who was on the team of setting up said, "Now I know what all went into that retreat that I just showed up to last time." So just that, not that you need to count all their hours, but just to feel the support of people who gladly took days off from work and went to the airport and picked people up and made food and phone calls and research and so many things. This is our fifth year here. So when we arrived yesterday, I had a different feeling coming here. It felt somehow more established or something like that. It felt like maybe we've been coming here a long time now. Maybe I know this place in a different way. And it ends up that it is our fifth annual deep rest retreat at Stonehouse. And so I want you to also feel the support of all of the people that came before and made this day possible for us. The people who had the idea of the retreat at all, the people who made it happen, the people who came to the retreats. And the first year, they were just finishing painting the hall the night before we began the retreat. They were just finishing installing the lights and everything. And now we get to be a little more settled than that. So, with a lot of thankfulness, Nico, Sarah, Jennifer, Kelly, all the good energy that's gone into letting us be here. And partly we can take it personally that they really did it for us. They really put their personal energy in so that we could personally be here. And we can also kind of take it up a notch and receive with a kind of dignity that's impersonal, that there was a willingness to put energy into making this hall available, making this land available, making this time available, and making it clear for a retreat to happen. Also kind of for an impersonal reason, for a wish to support someone, anyone, who would wish to be in silence for a few days and go deeply. So to kind of accept that those gifts as a personal gift, which can be harder for some people, they did it for you. And as an impersonal gift, that they did it for you as someone who has a calling to be here. Maybe you don't know why, maybe you do think you know why, but here we are, thanks to them. It's a good time at the beginning of any event to get the feeling for what it's like to begin. What is it like for you to begin? What is it like on a day that you can see yourself as a beginner? So we call this day, usually is called day zero. I don't know if we did that this time. Day one, okay. no day. So it's not even posted as any kind of day, day zero. What is it like for you? What is it like for your nervous system? What is it like for your expectations and thinking mind? For your conditioned emotional heart? What is it like for you to be aware of being beginning something? What happens? And there's a friend of mine who likes to applaud whenever a concept gets broken. So it's a good day to notice when your expectations or concepts break and to have the possibility of clapping silently, of course. So that one of the possibilities while we're here is not to get into an argument with the fact of thinking, but to be aware of the relief and the freedom sometimes when we were living through a concept. It's like having a glove on, and sometimes a very thick glove, and trying to touch something. And we're like, that feels just like the last thing I touched. It feels exactly the same. Well, it's because we're actually touching it through the same concept. We're not actually in touch with life sometimes. So sometimes when the glove falls apart, there can be a feeling of relief that we can miss because it's so light, it has such a light touch. Relief of the absence of a concept to negotiate my experience and then actual experience. The lightness of that, the intensity of that, the rawness of that can escape us if we're not kind of in readiness to enjoy that aliveness. Does that make sense? I want to start now and say again and again that I really welcome your questions anytime. I'm not really used to speaking to people who are mostly native English speakers. And so sometimes then I feel relaxed to speak really fast. the English that I spoke as a teenager, which is the last time that I really lived in the United States. So if I'm like, wow, dude, you know, then you can say, wait a second. What do you mean? So if at the beginning you notice excitement and optimism, then kind of take note of that and notice if that travels right through to some kind of negativity or if it's some more kind of, let's say, genuine openness. So noticing if it's a triggered reaction to being at the beginning excitement, optimism, or if there's a more, let's say, genuine or free openness that feels light. Or if you feel nervous, if you feel anxious, noticing if that travels through towards some kind of up, from the down to the up, if it's a connected, triggered reaction, or what else is going on in your life. So being able to not just catch, but really feel our tendencies, what gets triggered. And sometimes what gets triggered runs so deeply that it feels like that's the deepest that we are. And then we feel ashamed that the deepest that we are is anxiety, for example. And then we tend to go in a wrong direction. We go then away from the experience because it's hard, it's unpleasant, and we think it's wrong. And if we could rather assume that whatever we experience is not right or wrong, and whatever we experience is a way in. So sometimes we might experience anxiety and notice that we want to get away out of shame. And we could backpedal and come into contact with that, and that could be helpful. But I also want to say right from the beginning that an overall tendency that culturally we have, so it doesn't mean every single person has it, and it doesn't mean we all have it to the same degree, but most of us have an attraction, a practiced attraction towards negativity. So a couple of examples so that we can digest and feel whether it's true for yourself. When you're having a conversation with someone and they feel that they trust you enough to say something negative, I'm having a really hard time, it's kind of a signifier that we're having a deep conversation. And we feel honored and we feel closer. We think of ourselves as closer. Sometimes that's incredibly true and incredibly important moment. But if that is our only way of feeling deeply connected, I think there's a problem. I think that we're missing a lot in our life. So if we can also practice feeling intimacy, feeling closeness, feeling aliveness in lightness, in humor, in joy, in a sense of deep belonging, no matter what my experience is, no matter what's going through my head, no matter what emotion is running in my body chemistry, that deep sense of belonging could be something we could practice tuning into rather than our practiced attraction towards what is the emotion, what is the thinking. One way towards this can be to notice if you feel a lot of energy and a lot of activity in the head area, literally, to play with coming down. Or if you have more of an identification with emotion, you might not recognize yourself as being emotional, but you might feel if there's a lot going on here, it's the most important thing. You might think that if there's a lot going on in the chest, that is the most important thing. That's the deepest. And to play with coming down again to the lower belly or the lower back or the feet, coming again down, trying to find some kind of root that we could water so that the plant gets the water instead of watering the leaves, and then the leaves get burned. Another great practice that you can play with is just noticing when there's tension and playing with, so practicing a skill of releasing tension. And I love this one because it's so simple as to be almost simplistic. And so it's readily available. We don't have to remember what did I have to visualize first and then second, and was it gold and then silver, or silver and then gold? It's just the capacity to notice that there is tension, and then also the capacity to sometimes be able to drop that. And what I've noticed is that many times we don't want to drop the tension because it feels like a tension that is protecting us, that it's keeping us from harm or keeping us from contact where we don't know what might happen. So one example would be, we're right. Which, of course, we're always right. So, or we're really wrong, and that's another kind of tension that we experience every day, the right and the wrong. So either way, it's kind of more or less one thing. I'm so right that I'm wrong, or I'm just right. And there is a lot of wiring in us that tends to support our feeling right. So I've just been reading about a study where we, normal people, my father and his wife have a quotation next to their kitchen sink that says, the only normal people are the ones you don't know well. So us normal people are tested to assess themselves on, for example, driving skills. So how good of a driver are you? And way more than half of us consider ourselves better than average drivers. There's not many times that we would rate ourselves in anything as being lower than average. And in those things that is undeniable that we're lower than average in something, then the mind tends to consider that something as unimportant. So even though a lot of our inner experience is of self-criticism, self-hatred, beating ourselves up, feeling guilty, feeling ashamed, there's this kind of hyper-buoyancy that's going on at the same time. And my feeling about this is that as we start to develop an inner gentleness, so an atmosphere of gentleness, we can start to experience ourselves and our lives more realistically without it being so painful that we can't take it. So what it seems to me now is that if we catch ourselves, the mind is thinking a blaming thought, for example, or we're experiencing an emotion that we think we shouldn't be having, rage or whatever. It's so hard to accept that insight. It's actually an insight, seeing something fresh. It's so hard to accept it because it comes across as an insult, because we're so overcritical of ourselves usually, that little bit of chance for criticism is too painful. And so we say, no, I'm better than average driver, or I'm better than average swimmer, or whatever. And so finding your ways to have inner atmosphere of love so that acceptance happens naturally, so that acceptance of what you don't like that's going on in your experience happens naturally, so that acceptance of what is your gift that all of us have seen about you all along and you never noticed, so that we can actually perceive these things, experience these things in ourselves. Then our inner vision, our inner experiencing, can be more and more honest, and therefore more and more effective. Instead of trying so hard, we see, oh, I have this problem, I'm working on this problem, I've been going to therapy, I've been doing this workshop, I've been doing that workshop, I got this initiation, etc. Getting all the help we can possibly get with the problem that we're working on, and wondering why it seems to be taking so many decades. What seems to me a more direct route is when there is inner gentleness and we could see clearly without it being a catastrophe. The seeing itself, so the experiencing clearly itself, actually dissolves the knot that was the trigger point. So instead of, there's a trigger point and we try to flop it back the other way, and the mousetrap triggers again and we try to flop it back the other way, and it's really hard work. And that's something that we need to do. We do it anyway, meanwhile. But if the main activity, let's say, could be finding ways to trigger love, finding ways that symbolize love to you and doing that, so that our honesty gets more buoyancy, more power. And then noticing what we didn't want to see, what we thought would be the worst thing in the world, noticing that, starts to actually be fun. And I'm not saying pleasant, but it still actually, I can say, is fun. The whole system responds with yes. I want to experience that. I want to notice that. Instead of like, no, putting the brakes on. Don't let me see that. I don't want to see my shadow. Does that make sense? Are there any questions so far? So if our main practice is finding our own ways to bring about gentleness, and allowing the natural ability to notice what's out of place, letting that grow, it becomes easier to notice where there's tension. And it also becomes easier to let go of the tension, because the fact of tension is not an insult anymore. It's interesting. And what sometimes happens when we start to be able to notice, oh, I'm feeling tension because I want to be right against that person or that political party or whatever. And if I don't think that being right is that important, the tension can fall away, and still there might be some gap in understanding, there might be a gap in communication, there might be some friction. So letting go of tension doesn't mean erasing all friction or all differences, obviously. But it's sometimes really good to say the obvious. We're not erasing friction, we're not erasing difference by releasing tension. But releasing tension, releasing rightness or wrongness as a practice, can help us actually experience that friction or difference in a way that's growthful or fruitful. So if I don't need to be right, but I can still feel that I would rather that you sometimes clean up the dishes and not only myself or whatever, that these kind of things are really the important things, actually. Sometimes it's easy to be really on and centered and effective in an emergency situation or a crisis situation, but when we get home, it might be different. Sometimes the difference, the gap, the friction in the situation, if I let that act on me without letting go of what's important to me. So I'm not letting go of my deepest wish in this life. I'm letting go of my tension around the issue. And then the difference between what's actually happening and what my deep wish is actually can kind of work on me and on the situation in a way that can be really surprising. So humbling, and then creativity happens. An unexpected response comes through. So instead of saying the usual thing, you never wash the dishes or whatever, something else happens. So we get to practice that here in a kind of laboratory that we create these kind of forced conditions of being in silence and being together. So for some people, being in silence on their own would be no problem. It would be sometimes some people's everyday life. To be in silence and be together with people that you know and don't know is a challenge. And so let's just say we've accepted this challenge and here we are. To rest in a room, not my single room, but in a hall with people I know and don't know. So it would be sometimes easy for some people to be in a room full of people that I don't know. And then you end up knowing someone. And that can be more challenging. What do they think? Are they having a good retreat? They seem to be having a hard day. They're doing better than me, etc. This kind of tense thinking that can take over. So we're in a situation that in some ways is easier than most people's daily life. Most of us may not have someone cooking for us. Most of us may not have someone doing the dishes, doing the pots. Sorry, you wash your own plate, I think, but washing the pots and pans, mopping the dining room floor, etc. And the chance to really receive that gratefully and not just think, oh, well, this is a retreat and this is how it is, but to actually feel the intimacy of that situation and the delicate skin that we have in receiving so much support. It can be very fruitful. Being in a room full of people, leaving the room together, going to another room to eat, leaving that room, coming back to this room, and being in silence, not having the chance to express your opinion. That was such a good dinner, or I hated that dinner, wasn't that terrible? That was such a good Dharma talk. Oh my God, that was the worst Dharma talk I've ever heard. It's one area to feel for tension. If you feel the impulse to say something, where is it coming from? Expressing opinions is one of the main ways that most of us are trained to get a sense of me-ness and territory, power. I'm here, I exist. Not having the chance to express the opinions, you can have as many opinions as you want, but not being able to freely express it can help us learn about different kinds of opinion. And let's say, in my experience, about 99% of opinions are a cover-up for something else. And sometimes even the opposite is true. The opposite of our opinion may be true or more true or equally true. So again, it's not that opinion is the villain. There can be interest in what situation brings up, triggers, opinion. What's going on when there's a strong opinion and I really need to write the note to the manager because it can't be like this. I can't go on like this 3 whole days. Having said that, the notice board is there for a reason and we're here for a reason. We do want to hear from you when it feels important. And we also want you to not miss the chance to feel what's going on when there's a strong opinion. To play with, it's almost like relaying the tension. Instead of holding the tension, letting it go back into the situation. There's a difference between my expectation and what I perceive to be happening. Sometimes when we come back just to there, we realize that our perception was incorrect. And that's really interesting. Where did that come from? I thought they weren't taking care of me, and now I see that they are, And where did that feeling not taken care of come from, for example? Being in silence together, Jessica already mentioned the great relief of being able to turn off everything, especially the things that need to recharge the batteries, including yourself, but especially those things that you bought and live with. And we can see it also for ourselves in a similar way, that we need to recharge our batteries. That's one of the reasons that you might be here. You might not know how to recharge your batteries. You might not know where your batteries are. And that will probably show up. Or you might think that you do know where they are and how to do it, and you might find that other ways also come. But just the chance to be off, to be off duty, to be off guard, and to remember the importance of that, and to remember that you came in part for that, so that it's not just us telling you to do it. Sometimes it happens, just like when you try to turn off the computer and it goes through a whole long process before it will actually turn off. That can be what happens when we try to turn off our over-alertness. There might be a whole long process involved when we thought it was just a matter of giving ourselves permission. So being ready to be surprised is a good principle. Being ready to be surprised if you find that you're off without pushing any button, or that you push the button 80 times and you're still on. So being on duty, on guard, means tense, overly self-conscious, noticing what you think other people think of you, noticing what you think of other people. Having permission to lie down and fall asleep and not finding sleep. And possibly many more thoughts than you realize were possible in any 30 seconds. Emotions that you have never had, or you've had so many times but you thought you were done with that one. Or another good one is that you were expecting lots of emotion and there aren't any. So being ready to be surprised. One time I was going through one of the most intense times of my life, and I had the chance to do a 6-day retreat. And I was expecting a hurricane, because my life was a hurricane at that point. I was in the process of remembering sexual abuse in my childhood. And I was on a team of people that half of the staff was in the same process. We were the team holding that space of the meditation center, and I got to join a retreat. It was a women's retreat. It had all the markings of get ready for more chaos, and it was so peaceful and serene all 6 days. I kept thinking, okay, the 6th day will be the big explosion. So the readiness to be surprised, and the readiness to notice expectations that you didn't realize you had about your time here. And to go with what's actually happening can be a good idea. Another retreat, I was very enthusiastic to be able to do a 20-day retreat. It was a 10-day and then another 10-day back-to-back. And it was in India, in Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha was enlightened. And it was the second time I'd done this retreat. The first time was really life-transforming. And the first 5 days or so, I had a fever, and I was in bed in a dormitory hallucinating. So that was my retreat. That was the first half of it. And that's not going to happen here. Don't surprise me. No. And it was actually a wonderful part of the process of leaving behind a high pressure tendency from leaving behind college and realizing that another way of life was possible. So being in silence together and turning off what's usually too on. So each of us will explore and find different parts that are too on, too much on duty, too much on guard, and other parts that haven't had a chance yet. They haven't had a chance to have some space and some time and some energy to be felt even. And so it's really beautiful to have the chance to start leaving room. Leaving room sometimes is 1 second. And leaving room sometimes a space kind of opens up. And both are good. Not needing to speak, not needing to say even a word, not needing to be polite, not needing to say thank you, excuse me, sorry. Sometimes it's stressful. We drop something in the dining room and, oh, I'm sorry. So it's not a crime if it pops out of your mouth. It's not like the police are going to come around and chop off a finger or something. There's not anyone watching you in that way. And that's a great practice throughout this retreat, and hopefully you take it with you. Please do try this at home. It is dangerous. Not in the usual way. No one is watching you. We have the very strong habit, it might be the deepest habit, it's not the deepest of what we are, but we have this very strong habit of being watched, of splitting into the watcher and the watched inside. And so really noticing when you feel that you're being watched, you feel self-conscious, you notice yourself as if you could see yourself from their point of view, from my point of view, from the other's point of view. And really catching, if you can, and at least telling yourself, this is probably all in my own mind. And that doesn't mean you're crazy. It means you've noticed like the fundament of the machinery that could drive you crazy under stress. And gradually, again, when we can notice that tension of that split and let it go, maybe they're having an opinion about me and maybe they're not. Maybe their opinion is the opposite. Maybe they didn't even notice you're in the room. Whatever they're thinking, that's happening in their mind. And what you're thinking about them is happening in your mind. And having the chance to turn off that button, to just realize how freeing that all of that watching, containing, censoring is just a habit of mind. Leaves room for other ways of living. Leaves room to at least have a chance to wonder, what am I without someone watching? Without the pretense of someone watching. And so even when your mind is really busy, which is almost like very, very likely to be in the next 3 days, at least a few times, the thought that that thinking might be bothering the other people in the room, you won't be the only one thinking that. And that thought is just part of this self-censoring, self-watching, self-controlling that is not liberating, that is not freeing. If you find then, when you have the freedom not to be watched, even if the watcher is there, but you have the freedom to just let it be another thing happening, just like there are many different kinds of trees in the forest, there are many things going on in the mind, what else is happening? Sometimes what else is happening, if the watcher or the controller, the critic or whatever is very strong, we might need to go to something really direct, like a color or a sound or a texture, or weight, temperature, something really direct. So there's green, orange, blue, blonde, bamboo color, etc. There are colors. There's often sound. If there's not a sound outside, there's a sound inside. can hear the pulse in your ear, which can be a really good way. And there is body. So sometimes that's really a relief to come to. When we notice that the watcher, the controller, the critic, whatever is dominant, to find something else that's going on. You're not trying to erase the critic or battle the critic. I don't recommend that. You won't win. There's green. There's pressure. There's warm. There might be a lot of warm. <That's me. laughs> And it's just warm. Or when it's hot, and not warm, but hot, it's just hot. If we could keep it that simple, there are big steps and freeing steps that can happen in a day. Sometimes there are other things going on in your life that need attention and that come. And so you don't just have this kind of neutral playing field in your body and mind to just play with how you want. And again, going with what's actually happening. Knowing that it seems to be, in my experience, it is that everything that could happen is a way into the deep with honesty and humility, which is maybe another word for courage. For the silence, you have the chance to sense what will work well for you, and that can be fluid. You have the option, if you like, if it feels light and helpful for you, to even be in a kind of bubble and not even have eye contact with people. If you come for an interview with me, I would like for you to like take off your sunglasses and meet me. But other than that, it would be one option to really be in your own space. And so it could be fluid that sometimes you realize, this is very freeing and helpful to not even have eye contact. And other times eye contact may happen, or you might be really feeling supported by that. But just to be aware, if there's something in you that's nervously looking for that, for confirmation, it's not so fair to the others to indulge in that little addiction during a silent retreat. It may happen. If you know you need encouragement, come and talk to me, Jessica. And I'm very happy to announce that after how many years I've been wishing for it to happen, Erica, who's here in the green shirt, will be also helping with the teachings. She'll be available for interviews as well, and she'll be in the hall for some of the meditations. And we've known each other for getting close to a decade, yeah. And I've been asking her to move on this for at least 3 or 4 or 5 years. She was a little busy having a baby in between, but she's also a Pilates teacher and has a really amazing sense with body-mind connection, as well as a lot of meditation experience in Asia as well as in the West. Anything you want to add to that? And it will be posted clearly on the notice board when and where we're available. And we're also here 24 hours so that if you need us 24 hours, that's possible. Whenever you sense that you might need us, then go ahead and leave a note. Like, we're not trying to have emergencies. So leave a note if you know you might need to speak to one of us. And that gives us time to arrange childcare and stuff so we can be available. But in an emergency, come like lightning. And Jessica and I are in this next house, as she said. Are there any questions yet? So with the silence together, there's also the together part. And I've spoken already about how easily we project our own criticism and also other things onto other people, imagining what they think of us. Another more skillful way of drawing on the resource of being together, just feeling again that not only are we receiving personal support from persons, we're also receiving impersonal support from people who have this kind of, like you, impersonal calling, like a human calling to go deeper, to live a happy life, to be of service to the world, to be of benefit to all beings. Whatever your flavor, whatever words you would use, you have a calling to something deeper. And in many ways, you've already expressed that and practiced that and learned, and there's still a calling for more, deeper, more sensitive, more precise, more love. And sometimes we could tune into the lack of when we feel a calling towards more. We might tune into a lack of love, a lack of precision, a lack of sensitivity in ourselves or others. And I would really like to suggest the practice of tuning into just the fact of your calling, even if you would call it by a different word, feel free. The fact of your wish to live more deeply, more sensitively, more clearly, or whatever word you would use. You didn't implant that in yourself. And no matter how much you've done in honor of that, there's still the fact of that calling that somehow comes to a human being and not to every human being. And so feeling the honor of being that human being, seeing yourself in that way, not the lack, but the deep pull, the pull for depth, and being in a room of other people who have that as well. There will be people, this is how we are so far, maybe this will change if we keep practicing and relaxing and freeing ourselves. But as it is now on the earth, there will be people already in the room that you feel more and less connected to. And that's just human psychology. And so the possibility of noticing that and not going too far down the positive or the negative road in your idea of someone, just kind of reining that back in. And coming back to the fact of here we are, we're willing to try to turn off the over-alertness, the on-duty, on-guard mode that is otherwise so encouraged in our culture. Part of the being here together is also there is a schedule. And even if sometimes we would love to be in silence on our own, following our own rhythm, on this retreat we have actually a schedule to help us not even have to think about, shall I go lie down now, or shall I go jogging, or shall I listen to a talk, or the talk is at 4:45, the walking meditation is at 11:15, but etc. And we have the great good luck that Katora is not only a wonderful childcare friend of my son Gyan, but she's also an amazing yoga teacher with a lot of training in India as well as in New York City, the second yoga capital of the world outside of India, probably. And she'll be leading yoga in the mornings most days. If it works out with Gyan, I'm hoping that I might be able to come in some mornings. I don't know if that will happen on the weekend. Instead of Katora, to lead something a little more wild and crazy, but still silent, that is improvised movement. Since I don't yet know if it's going to happen, I won't go into detail, but we'll be able to post that on the board, I hope, if it's going to happen. So you know, if you're going to a led yoga class or a led wild and crazy improvised movement that anyone can do, it's not that you have to be acrobatic. You could really have just as much fruitful depth playing with moving one finger in that improvised movement as you could if you can move, you know, do backflips or whatever. And that will be in the pavilion, which is behind the main house, dining room, etc. And you're very welcome to do your own connected movement elsewhere. So your own room or that upstairs room above the office that's got a nice soft carpet and is air conditioned. But not here. In case someone just wants to get up early and come early and do more meditation, we have the luxury of having these different spaces. So this hall is for stillness. Stillness yoga, if you like. And movement yoga can be outside. I do recommend that you do some movement. So if you're not a movement person and you don't want to do the yoga, feel very free to go on a walk or some kind of movement. If not that at that time, that would be preferable, but if not at that time, sometime during the day to complement all the stillness. And to also enjoy this big green space that we have here. I'll be giving instructions every day, and I will be giving guided meditations in the afternoon once or twice during the weekend. And as I said to some of you in the interviews, it's just to offer you some suggestions that if you resonate with them, feel free to go with it and fly. And if it doesn't resonate with you, feel also free to not go with it and fly, to do your own practice that you already love and know, to be open to just resting and see what comes, or to be open to exploring and discovering, uncovering your very accurate, it's incredibly precise inner guidance. And that can take many years to find. That's basically uncovering your way, because that's what tells you what's important, what has priority right now, and what might be a good way to embody that. Does that make sense? It's a little bit abstract. So what I most wish for is that you feel the freedom to relax, as well as the freedom to feel a little bit pushed or encouraged, if you prefer, to break habits, to get out of habits, to be open to something that sounds too simple or too easy or too naive or too silly, which are usually the kind of adjectives we would use to describe what the inner voice suggests to us. Silly, embarrassing, it's not in the books, no one else does it, everyone else is being so serious or whatever. So being ready to hear that more playful, light, spontaneous, but incredibly precise about timing and incredibly precise about what can be helpful, what's worth trying. To be open to that is my dream, my wish for us here. Okay, I might just go over a few posture pointers. You have on the board a poster that has some photos of different postures for lying down. There'll be a poster of sitting postures also as soon as we can. We're getting it from the person who created it for us still. So you're free in the hall for the stillness to stand, to sit in a chair, to sit on your cushions, or to lie down. If you want to lie down, if you snore, I would recommend lying face down or on your side, because then the snoring tends to be less noticeable for others. It's not that snoring is not allowed, it's just another sound of nature. But it's not also a snoring contest. Who can snore the loudest is most deeply resting. So if you know you snore, try face down, which is anyway, for many people, a more deeply going posture. So even if you don't snore, feel free to try lying down on your front, which for most people, you would want to have cushions under your main body so that your arms and legs are lower than your main body, and then a small cushion maybe under the ear just so that your neck is not turned too far to the side. Does that make sense? Or should I just do it? Okay. I can do it in a dress. So if we accept how important it is, how the body posture is, then we're willing to do what's needed. So I'm convinced that there's almost always enough stuff around. So I'm not going to put my head on this, but I need about this much height so I can put it under this head pillow. So this would be one way. It's actually really good. I never thought of this, putting something under the pillow, but it's perfect. It's better than a pillow. You can also do, I don't know if I can do this with a dress, but let's see. Excuse me. With one leg up like this, like some people sleep. So it's a kind of a three quarters profile position. Lying on the side can be good if you're uncomfortable in other positions or if you're really, really sleepy and you maybe want to hear the instructions or something. You're less likely to fall asleep. It's not that there's anything wrong with sleeping in the hall, but if your wish is to be awake more, to hear instructions or something, then this might be a good posture. So cushion between the legs to protect the back. If you're lying on your back, then I really recommend a few things. One is that the knees are raised, but also try having the heels raised as well, higher than the knees. So hips, knees, heels. The heels are not flying off in the air. They're supported. So whether the feet are lower or higher, please support them so that there's not strain on your legs. It's just a simple principle of giving support to the body. You might find that you even want to have some support for your arms on the sides. So it would be like a big lazy boy chair all stretched out. You've got the armrests. And I just found out recently that there are whole schools of yoga that this is what they do. And the teachers just learn how to do the support. So how to do a lazy boy reclined as a yoga posture, restorative yoga posture. So kind of we're on the map now. Okay. Does anyone want to try sitting in a chair? So if you find that you need a chair, then maybe look on the board when that sitting postures thing is up, or just talk to me briefly about it.
Hard chairs.
Cool. Great. So you can always grab a chair from under the shed there by the porta potty. Oh, cool. Great. Let's just have a few minutes, and then we'll have a break before dinner. Just a few minutes being quiet in the hall together, not even meditating, just being here. Just letting your being launch into the silence gently, like a boat leaving the shore, feeling yourself supported by it, the buoyancy of it, of yourself in silence. not needing to be someone. Not needing to be important or liked. Not needing to have territory. As the boat floats on through the water. No right, no wrong. Whatever is flowing by through the mind, through the heart, through the being. And just being open or aware, open to, aware of the deeper sense of things as they are, deeper sense of things as they are happening, with precision and aliveness, sounds and sensations and colors, and even thoughts and emotions. How alive, how precisely known and then gone they are. How much like a flow our experience is. Here and gone. And what else is here as a kind of steadiness in all of that flow? A kind of buoyancy. Untouched by the changes, the coming and going. And at the same time, appreciative of what is happening. Receptive to color, sound, texture, pressure, temperature, thought, emotion, energy, atmosphere. No right, no wrong. Aliveness. We have a 15-minute break before supper, and then at 8 o'clock we'll meet back in the hall for the first meditation. Thank you for being here.